This podcast is brought to you by Audible. Have you been wanting to read more, but don't seem to have the time? Well, with Audible, you can read your books without having to find the extra time in your busy schedule. Stuck in traffic on your way home from work? Why not marathon the Harry Potter books? In the gym and want to learn about the First Lady? Well, you can listen to Becoming Michelle Obama while doing leg day. And if you go to audibletrial.com/cultivate, you get a month free of Audible. That includes one credit that you can trade in for any audiobook of your choice, access to thousands of audiobooks free to listen to with your account, and best of all, you have access to all of your favorite podcasts in the app as well. So be sure to go to my link, audibletrial.com/cultivate. That's C-U-L-T-I-V, the number 8, to sign up for a free month of Audible and start reading today. Thank you, Audible, for supporting the show. Oh my God, John, were you up on Wikipedia all night?
John, are you okay? You're shaking.
You guys, you will not believe what I just read on Wiki. Welcome to Reddit on Wiki, the poorly researched, semi-funny podcast on random stuff we find on the internet.
Who are you talking to?
And why are you shaking so much?
Subscribe to Reddit on Wiki on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Sean, I'm scared.
Me too, buddy. Me too.
In 1987, a police officer from the Australian state of Victoria launched a raid on a compound located just outside of the city of Melbourne. They had gone into it expecting the worst, since the operation was based on horrifying claims made by teenagers who allegedly escaped from it. But as their investigation uncovered more and more evidence, nothing could have prepared them for the truth of what really went on inside that compound. Hi Fred, my name is Josh Shell, host of the Let's Start Cult podcast, and that was my first attempt at trying out an intense true crime intro. If you liked it, let me know what you think. If you didn't, then I will sentence you to download and review every episode of my podcast, 5 stars of course. In today's episode, we will be covering the story of The Family, a new age group based in Australia whose sweet photos of identical looking kids masked a horrifying truth. Unfortunately, the lifelong trauma that these children suffered wasn't enough to put their adopted mother behind bars. Any episode involving kids are pretty heavy, and when I have to deal with heavy things, I always ask my girlfriend for help. I moved last week and she was one-handing couches into the moving truck.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It was quite a sight to see, so please give a warm welcome to Sienna. Sienna, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thank you.
We're making barbecue pizza today, so we have to crush the episode in time for this.
Yeah.
What are we putting on the pizza?
I don't know, sauce. It has to be a saucy pizza. And cheese. Although, I already did the dough. I did that by myself.
Oh, you didn't, I'm sorry. Help. My bad.
Yeah, that's okay.
I'll make the pizza.
You can barbecue it.
Yeah. So as you heard before, we are talking with The Family. Not the Manson family, but a new age Australian group. Have you heard of them before?
I have not heard of them before.
Okay.
That's exciting.
Okay, so you excited to hear about
this
child adopting person?
Sure. And the podcast I've been listening to recently, it's Australian too. So deep into the...
I'd ask you to shout it out, but we don't shout out other podcasts. Yeah. All right. Well, we're just going to jump into it then so that you can quickly learn and we can get to our pizza.
Awesome.
Born on December 30th, 1921, in a rural town in Australia state of Victoria, Anne Hamilton Byron had less than a stellar home life. Christened Evelyn Grace Victoria Edwards, that's quite the British sounding name.
Yeah, very royal.
Her entire childhood was spent in poverty, which is ironic, poverty-stricken conditions, and she was often forced to look after her 7 younger siblings. Her father, Ralph, worked as an engineer cleaner on the railways, although he often left his family for long periods of time in order to avoid debt collectors.
Oh my God.
Meanwhile, her mother, Florence, claimed to be a psychic medium who could communicate with the dead. Later, she was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia and hospitalized in several mental institutions.
Doesn't sound like a great childhood, but... Yeah,
I mean, most cult leaders, I find, don't really have great childhoods.
That's fair.
This is just par for the course, but it is hilarious that her dad just takes off to avoid debt.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say because he works on the railway and sometimes they're gone for periods of time, but nah.
Absolutely nothing to do with that. Much sadder.
Yeah.
In 1941, Hamilton Byron left her small town behind and changed her name to Anne Hamilton. Mm. Shortly after, she married a 24-year-old officer with the Royal Australian Air Force named Don Harris and had a daughter with him whom they named Judith.
Judith, no.
No. Their marriage was short-lived, however, with Harris dying in a car crash in 1955. The irony is he was like flying planes all the time, never crashed those. But
I mean, I feel like it's easier to crash a car. Well, just higher chance.
Yeah, that's true, I guess.
That's awful, though. That's really
less
sad.
Less people in the air.
Yeah.
But yeah, very sad. At the time, the couple had been in the process of adopting a baby boy from a children's charity, but Harris's death meant that their application was ultimately denied. Grief-stricken at her loss for her long... Grief-stricken at her loss, her longed...
Would you like me to...
that would be nice. Grief-stricken at her loss, at her losing...
At losing.
Thank you, Jesus. Grief-stricken at losing her longed-for second child, Hamilton Byron relocated to Melbourne and became a yoga teacher, training under a Swiss woman named Margaret Segsman, who claimed to have spent several years in, living in an Indian ashram.
That sounds pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Margaret.
Very zen.
Very zen. Although I think it's where she starts getting her new age ideas. So maybe not the best. 3 months after they met, though, Segsmond accused Hamilton Byron of putting a spell on another student and asked her to leave the group.
That's interesting.
Was this Hogwarts or something?
Yeah.
A year after arriving in Melbourne, Hamilton Byron encountered Raynor Carey Johnson, an Englishman 2 decades her senior and a renowned scholar in the field of spectroscopy.
What's that?
It is the branch of science concerned with the investigation and measurement of spectra produced when matter interacts with or emanates electromagnetic radiation.
Okay.
So.
Still have no idea. Not a science person, but that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So that's radiation. I guess he deals with radiation. However, he began dabbling in paranormal phenomenon after his retirement in 1964, even going so far as to become friends with a self-proclaimed mystic. Hamilton Byron introduced herself to Johnson by knocking on his door in December 1962 and issuing grave warnings about his upcoming travels to India. She claimed that his wife Mary would fall severely ill, and true enough, she did.
That sounds suspicious.
Yeah, you think she poisoned her?
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it past her. Given that Hamilton Byron's prophecy seemed to have been fulfilled, the Johnsons returned to Melbourne and dedicated their entire lives to her.
Wait, what? What do you mean?
So after they went to India, they returned.
Oh, and then they focused on her. Okay.
Yeah. They were like, okay, well, you were right about this. So
you must be right about it.
So you're a witch. We will succumb to whatever you want us to do.
Nice.
In 1963, Raynor and his wife, Mary, and their daughter, Maureen, along with 4 other people, participated in a ritual that involved hallucinogenic mushrooms and the recognition that Hamilton Byron was actually Jesus Christ in female form.
Always has to be a... Our Lord and Savior figure.
Some sort of Jesus figure or whatever. This eventually led them to forming a group called the Great White Brotherhood of Initiates and Masters.
That sounds like a boys club, like
a
scholarly boys club or something.
You wouldn't assume that's led by a woman.
No.
It also sounds a little racist.
Yes, the Great White Brotherhood.
Yeah. Questionable. I don't know Australians. History on race.
Oh, it's not like Canada doesn't have a great one, but Australia definitely doesn't have good. Yeah, with the indigenous population there.
Yeah, good to know. So yeah, potentially an underlying racism to that, but unconfirmed. In 1965, Hamilton Byron met Dr. Howard Whitaker, a psychiatrist known for his attempt to get the government to allow the use of LSD when treating patients. It wasn't long before he had also joined her organization, whose name had already been changed to The Family by then.
Okay, so that makes more sense.
Maybe they're like, some people are questioning our intentions. We'll call it something nicer. Dr. Whitaker often conducted research studies at a private clinic in New Haven, a town located on Phillip Island, Australia. It was here that the family would recruit most of their members, including Bill Byron, a wealthy building contractor, and Hamilton Byron's future husband, whose son had been committed for drug abuse. The family's ranks significantly increased through the 1960s, with each member required to go through a lengthy initiation process wherein they had to declare their devotion to Hamilton Byron and her dogma, which blended together Christianity, Eastern mysticism, and apocalyptic prophecies, like every other goddamn cult. Its main premise was that the world was in its final karmic cycle, and thus no further reincarnation would take place.
Sounds like an existential crisis, which I have frequently.
Every night.
Yes.
But this one's an interesting one because they assume there is reincarnation, but that our karma's run out and this is the final, there's no more reincarnation after this, which is interesting.
Yeah, it is. So that everybody would just...
Would we just die out?
No, because people are still having children.
Isn't the idea of
but it's a new soul. So what? There's just soulless children being born.
Around. Yeah. Oh, God.
I don't know.
Oh, that's disturbing. We'll move on. Yeah. Hamilton Byron promised her devotees salvation from this inevitable doomsday. She told them that she was Jesus Christ and would be able to shoulder their sins in order to pay their karmic debt and save them from being obsolete. In return for this, however, they had to promise total obedience, calling her the master, and blindly following whatever she said.
Sounds fair. Fair trade.
Yeah. She's got kind of like girl boss energy. Yeah. You know? She's like, I fuck with it.
Yeah.
She's turning it on its head. She's becoming the leader. And I'm in for this feminist movement.
Sure. It doesn't sound too bad so far.
Other than threatening them with their souls, basically.
Yeah, that's true, I guess.
In one of her sermons, she preached to the members that, quote, I am looking right at each one of you. You are the initiate. You are the cosmic being. You are staring into the awakening. This is the moment of rebirth on a new planet. We've received the call and great things will be done. End quote.
That stresses me out.
Are you ready to give your soul to her?
No.
She can burn your soul.
I don't want to be a cosmic being.
Oh, I see. Okay. You're like, I'd rather just die.
Yeah.
Unlike other cults, the family's ranks consisted of educated professionals such as architects, lawyers, doctors, and nurses. This was mainly due to how, at the time, upper middle class Australians were exhibiting an increased interest in alternative spiritual and mysticism. So it just goes to show you, it doesn't matter how smart you are, you can always be duped.
That's true.
I think that's a lovely sentence. I don't know, scary, but also
that's true. Yeah,
brings us all together.
Book smart, street smart.
Yeah, we're all able to be corrupt.
That's true, yeah.
To add to that, Hamilton Byron's first and most devoted follower, Rainer Johnson, would often get his friends to join the family, telling them that she was the Messiah who would save them from total destruction. According to Fran Parker, another one of Hamilton Byron's early followers, quote, we didn't think ourselves as a cult. Everyone there seemed to be on a similar wavelength. They were just lovely people who were sincerely looking for the spiritual dimension in their lives. End quote.
Like, it doesn't seem so bad yet. Like, it's just a different type of religion, I guess.
Yeah.
A little more intense, but.
That's fair. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A little more intense.
Because, like, right now, what? They're not living all together, right? They're probably just attending services and.
Yeah. I think it's just a gathering thing. I think we talk about that in upcoming here.
Okay.
Members of the family adhered to the motto, unseen, unheard, unknown. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Which implies that they belong to an exclusionary spiritual elite. All of them were made to regularly consume LSD or magic mushrooms.
That sounds fun.
Yeah, exactly. Which they believed was a secret mana and which Hamilton Byron was able to easily procure thanks to her followers who worked in the medical field. Mm. Besides LSD, the family also constantly dosed themselves with a concoction of vitamins, herbal supplements, psychoactive drugs, and tranquilizers.
This is the 60s?
Yeah.
I feel like that tracks.
Wait, 60s? 60s, 70s.
Okay,
probably.
Fair.
Yeah. Yeah. It's on track for that. Which served to make them even more compliant to Hamilton Byron's whims.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of, like I talked about the Manson family, he definitely used drugs too. Make his followers more easily manipulative.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Whether that's their goal or just they want to get high and then...
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly how.
But your judgment changes for sure.
Yeah, exactly. At its height, the family had around 500 adult members, all of whom would cram themselves inside the Santa Kinitan Lodge, a property located a few kilometers outside the city of Melbourne. It was owned by the Johnson family who allowed Hamilton Byron to use it every Thursday night as a place where she preached to her devotees. So yeah, just a gathering thing right now. During these gatherings, members would be asked to give a majority of their income to Hamilton Byron, allowing her to build her and her husband's wealth. Because of this, they were able to acquire several properties in Australia, England, and the United States.
Wow.
When the family's activities were made public in 1987, Hamilton Byron's net worth was estimated to be more than $50 million.
Oh my God. How many followers do they have? Because like the Catholic Church, like, you know what I mean? You do a donation every Sunday and it goes towards keeping it up.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a new...
Well, this is decades of like people giving her the majority of their earnings.
So it's not like $10 at mass.
No. And these are like people making, like they're doctors and stuff. Lawyers. So they're making a lot of money.
A little extra.
So yeah, you had like 500 salaries over a couple decades. It adds up. Plus investing and whatever she did. I don't know. I'm not an investor. Don't.
No. Can you help me? Tell me more.
Bitcoin, I believe. Yeah. No, don't. Many contemporary researchers have noted that while the family consisted of wealthy and well-educated professionals, rather than free-thinking youths, it still bore the characteristics of cults that flourished throughout the 1960s. For one thing, drug use was rampant, with consumption of LSD and psilocybin encouraged by Hamilton Byron. For another, its message of sex, power, and liberation from conservative societal norms resonated with the influential movements that characterized this particular period.
Oh, so they didn't have like I feel like some cults are like, don't have relations or marriage. Mm. Don't do this. Don't do drugs, alcohol.
Yeah.
And this one's like, do whatever you want. Just give me money.
we just want your money.
Yeah.
And we can do drugs together.
I mean, fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, fair enough. In fact, the family was so alienated from the usual conventions that its members allowed Hamilton Byron to meddle in their marital and familial relationships, which she often rearranged to fit her vision. It was this focus on familial ties that would lead Hamilton Byron and the family to carry out the activities that they would eventually be known for.
So what? Like she would tell people you're breaking up or like you're going to be with this person? Or
Probably in ways, but that's not necessarily what they're known for. Okay. It's more the children, which we're going to get into in the next section. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, not great. But you know who won't interfere with your marital and familial relationship status?
Who?
the wonderful people that are paying for our pizza tonight. So
who's paying for our pizza tonight?
Hopefully these sponsors.
Nice. Love that.
Yeah. Enjoy some ads. This podcast is brought to you by Audible. Have you been wanting to read more but don't seem to have the time? Well, with Audible, you can read your books without having to find the extra time in your busy schedule. Stuck in traffic on your way home from work? Why not marathon the Harry Potter books? In the gym and want to learn about the First Lady? Well, you can listen to Becoming Michelle Obama while doing leg day. And if you go to audibletrial.com/cultivate, you get a month free of Audible. That includes one credit that you can trade in for any audiobook of your choice, access to thousands of audiobooks free to listen to with your account, and best of all, you have access to all of your favorite podcasts in the app as well. So be sure to go to my link, audibletrial.com/cultivate. That's C-U-L-T-I-V, the number 8, to sign up for a free month of Audible and start reading today. Thank you, Audible, for supporting the show.
If someone told you, a cult leader told you that you had to break up with me, would you?
Absolutely not.
Nice.
No, I would leave.
The cult? Wow. That would be the last straw.
Plus, I would be the leader in any cult, I think, so.
Oh.
Yeah. that's what it is.
Yeah, that's one less worry.
Yeah. Anyway,
yeah,
back to
kids.
Terrible things happening to children. By the late 1960s, Hamilton Byron had become such an influential person that she was able to convince the Victorian Education Department to register the family as a school.
Mm.
Yeah. In 1969, children began arriving, and 3 years later, they were moved to a property called Kailama.
Is it this easy to just start a school? It's not. I would know.
Nowadays. go to Australia. Maybe it's really easy there. Or maybe
we're moving.
They changed the laws because of this. So they were moved to a property called Kailama or Uptop, which was located on Lake Eldon. In total, about 28 children would come to live there. Of these, 14 were the biological or adopted children of Hamilton Byron's devotees, who had willingly given them up for her to raise.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Others had been attained through scam adoptions, which were facilitated by the members of the family who worked as doctors.
Oh my God. This is I feel like straight out of Marvel Black Widow taking kids.
True. We just watched that. Yeah, that's true. Actually, there's a very strong connection. Maybe this is where the story comes from.
Yeah.
So they were doctors.
Yeah.
So to do this scam, they would drug their patients as they went into labor and convince them to hand over their newborn infants.
What about after? When they're like, I am not on drugs anymore and I want my child.
I guess if they can convince them to hand them over and sign.
That's true. I feel like even on drugs, like new mothers wouldn't give up their child. Yeah. I don't know. What kind of drugs are they on? Like,
maybe they were also selective of who
they chose. Like maybe they preyed on like vulnerable people who maybe aren't ready for a kid or like.
Are unsure. Yeah.
That's so, still awful. I literally can't imagine that.
Yeah. Very fucked up. Yeah. At Up Top, the children were cared for by three women, Patricia McFarlane, Elizabeth Whitaker, and McClellan.
Yeah.
Jesus, I had the hardest time with her name. All of whom they referred to as aunties. Their daily routine involved yoga, meditation, and the study of spiritual texts.
That doesn't sound like a bad school, but...
I mean, they're not learning math or anything, so...
That's true.
They were also made to adhere to a strict vegetarian diet that was supplemented by regular doses of LSD.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so they're drugging kids.
That's crazy. This also reminds me of the Handmaid's Tale.
Just making all the connections.
Yeah, sorry.
I've never actually watched that, but...
I read the books.
Oh yeah, there is a book.
Yeah. And there's a second one.
You can see where my brain is at.
Yeah.
the film adaptations. The aunties were very strict in disciplining the children. For instance, their beds had to be made by 6 a.m. every day, which was followed by an hour-long session of hatha yoga and about 15 minutes of listening to records of Hamilton Byron's sermons, as well as a mantra chanting meditation and a short break to organize their schoolroom. So very early mornings, I would... not do well at that school.
Bed made by 6 a.m.? I'd be okay.
You'd be okay. Yeah, I was going to say, you were up pretty early today. Most days, actually.
Yeah.
According to the researcher, Carol Cusack, quote, 2 hours after rising, they ate a fruit breakfast. 3 hours of schoolwork were punctuated by short breaks. Then the children had 1 hour of meditation or space ball, a game hand-devised, followed by lunch.
What's the game? Are you going to tell me what?
You want to know what the game is? Spaceball? Okay.
I'm always interested in new games that I could potentially play with kids unless it's really bad.
Spaceball game? The family.
Yeah, I guess there's probably a bunch of spaceball games that like.
It's not showing up.
Oh my God.
Uh-oh.
That's okay.
All right. Yeah, I don't know what Spaceball is.
Interesting.
So this was followed by a lunch of steamed vegetables and fruit. The next three and a half hours involved lessons, a short break, and packing up the schoolroom. From 5 p.m. to 9 p.m., the children meditated, ate a bland vegetarian meal, read spiritual texts, and did homework before bedtime.
So they didn't really have any fun. I mean, it doesn't sound like, obviously it sounds bad. It's like they're away from their parents and they're going through this very strict routine. But like, I mean, fruit for breakfast, yoga.
Yeah, they're only eating.
Yeah, I know.
I can't imagine that be. I mean, there are vegetarians, obviously. Yeah, but they also supplement their diet with vitamins and protein and stuff like that in different ways. So I can't imagine they have a healthy.
No, and they're growing. So they would need like.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean,
plus there's LSD in their food, right?
Yeah. Well,
so,
yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's all okay. Never mind.
If we're thinking about everything, that's probably the worst.
Yeah.
So to appear as if the children were adhering to the state's mandated educational system, the family registered a school called the Aquilin College in 1984. Whenever the authorities arrived to inspect its activities, the children were coached on what to do and what to say. The vegetarian diet that the children were forced to abide by was far from as sufficient for their growing bodies, as we just talked about. Most of them were malnourished and resorted to stealing food. Although the aunties and Hamilton Byron resolved this by body shaming them, especially the girls.
You can't, even in like the middle of nowhere, away from like social norms and media, girls can't escape body shaming.
Yeah. Even in cults led by women.
Yeah. That's brutal.
Which is fucked up. Yeah. In her memoir, Sarah Moore, who grew up in the family, recalled that, quote, weighing was a very serious business, particularly for us because it was considered that we were putting on too much weight. We would have our food rations cut down, and that was a dreadful proposition, food being the most important things in our lives. We girls viewed the scale with hatred. They made our miserable lives even worse. Some of the girls would even try to induce vomiting on weighing mornings in an attempt to seem lighter, end quote.
That's awful.
So they're resorting to like bulimia, which is
that's
fucked up. Yeah. Many contemporary researchers have theorized that Hamilton Byron, who was chubby as a child, projected her body image issues on on the children. As an adult, she would regularly undergo liposuction and other cosmetic procedures, which made her even more charismatic and appealing to the outside world. Love that.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Some even took to saying that she used her mind to court women, but relied on her body and her good looks to entice men. Ooh. She may have been vain, but Hamilton Byron was also notoriously prude, which led her to shame girls in her care for experiencing normal bodily processes like menstruation.
Oh my, that's crazy. Even now, like, people don't talk enough about that stuff. And then these girls are like, this normal thing that happens to your body? Nah.
Yeah, you'll be shamed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fucked up. So much for the feminist girl boss. Yeah. I hate it now.
Yeah, woman-led cult.
But that's not all. The children were also frequently beat by the aunties, who carried out the abuse according to Hamilton Byron's wishes. Later, Leanne Crease, who spent most of her childhood in the Uptop compound, recalled that they were sometimes made to go through a process similar to waterboarding.
Oh my God.
With their heads being submerged in buckets of water whenever their answers weren't to the adults' likings. There were also times when Hamilton Byron would ask them to be whipped with belts while she listened to their screams on the phone.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's actual torture.
Oh yeah.
Awful. Yeah. Yeah. Well, all of it's torture.
Well, but yeah, like, I was going to say.
Geez.
Yeah, 28 kids going through all this.
Jeez. Are there other adults there except for the aunties? Like their parents are not there, even the ones that were given up, right?
No,
willing people.
They're kind of secluded, right?
Yeah.
They're kind of on their own compound, led by the aunties.
Okay.
Like three women are taking care of them all.
So say participants who like gave up their kids to go to this, like they're not on their own compound. Like they're living their lives with their jobs and stuff and just going to mass or gatherings.
Yeah. I would imagine that's probably mostly how most of them anyway. Some might be living with Hamilton Byron. I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
But yeah, most of them are just living their lives. And then it's like they just sent their kid to
Bible camp.
Yeah, basically.
I went to Bible camp.
It's okay. Yeah. So pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
But gets worse.
Yeah. Oh, great.
In some ways. The children's cries were often heard by neighbors across Lake Eldon. However, all 28 of them would be forced to hide inside a tiny hole, which would then be covered up with a painting whenever local police arrived to investigate.
Are the police officers like not trained well enough that they get to a spot where they know there's children and they don't see any children and they're not questioning that?
I guess not.
Okay.
Like, I don't know.
I don't know. This might seem suspicious.
Like, I guess, so just thinking like what could possibly, like maybe the police constantly get calls like, oh, there's kids screaming across the lake.
I guess.
Maybe they think like it's like a lake. Party or something. Like keep it down or whatever. I'm not sure exactly the circumstances,
fair.
But not that I'm covering up for the police.
No.
They fucking suck sometimes. So. But there was one instance when they weren't able to hide themselves quickly enough. When questioned by the authorities, though, they all claimed that they were being fed and treated properly. Later, Leanne Cress and Sarah Moore explained that despite the abuse, they had become attached to Hamilton Byron, believing her to be their biological mother.
Just 28 kids. Yeah. Just,
you made us all.
Yeah.
Some of us are the same age and don't look similar.
Yeah.
In an interview, Cress said that, quote, "We were all very protective of our parents and of what was happening at the time. Nobody would dare to say anything. As a child, of course, you love your parents. And it doesn't matter what they do to you. You love them," end quote. Which is true. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, you hear about it all the time, right?
If you're growing up in this situation, you don't really know any better either. So.
No, it's true.
Besides this mental and physical torture, the children were also frequently subjected to Hamilton Byron's whims. For instance, she would film and photograph them dressed in identical old-fashioned clothes, all with their hair dyed peroxide blonde.
What was the point of that? For fun?
Yeah, funsies.
Okay.
I don't know. I guess it's like just power.
Probably, yeah.
And I don't
know. Cute family picture.
It's like when people dress their dogs up. It's like.
Yeah. True. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. That's probably what she thinks of these people
as,
basically, which is fucked. Some of these images also showed her alongside the children, looking glamorous in her expensive clothes, jewelry, and signature blonde wig. Another thing that Hamilton Byron did was group the children together according to an arbitrary system. For instance, Sarah Moore recalled that she was classified as, quote, single until she was 7 years old when she was decided that she would be a twins with a boy named Stefan who was close to her age.
What?
So she was just like, you're twins
making
now.
Things up. Okay, fair.
That's cool. I've always wanted a twin. Someone could just be like, you have a twin now.
That would be weird now. Someone's like, you have a twin now.
I would think it's cool.
Okay, sure.
This arrangement lasted until they were 14, when Sarah became triplets with her fellow teenagers, Luke and Timothy. What? So just completely different people.
Oh my God. Like, is this, I guess they don't know any better. Like,
yeah, I mean, yeah.
Imagine someone's like, you're things. Triplets now. Or my brother and my sister, you're all triplets now. Okay, sure.
And then 2 years, you're twins with this other person.
Yeah, no, that's.
So around that time, she also became a New Zealander, despite being previously told that she'd been born in Australia. They all sound the same. That'll piss off.
I mean,
In 1984, Sarah recalled that her name was changed from its previous Andre to Sarah. For her, these drastic changes in her birthplace and the relationships that she had with other children demonstrated the influence that Hamilton Byron had over the family. She had become so powerful and so venerated that she could alter facts and reality at will.
Yeah, it seems she's just playing God.
It wasn't just the children's relationship that Hamilton Byron manipulated, though. For instance, Fran Parker, one of her first devotees, who was made to divorce her husband. So,
oh my.
As you were asking.
Yeah.
Yes, she did, in fact, manipulate regular families as well. Yeah, not just the children.
Yeah.
When she initially refused, she was threatened with a stint at a local psychiatrist hospital, psychiatrist hospital, which was run by a fellow members of the family.
What would you do?
Oh, I'd go.
Nice.
They just drug me up.
Yeah. Be great.
Yeah. Be a fun time.
I'd visit you.
Yeah. It'd be like over the cuckoo's nest or whatever.
One flew up.
You'd have to put a pillow on my head.
No.
Have you ever watched that movie?
No. It's a book. I've never read it.
That's how it ends. Sorry. Sorry
to spoiler.
The downfall of the family was instigated by Leanne Kress and Sarah Moore, both of whom had been brought up in the Uptop compound. Sick of the mental, emotional, and physical torture that they were going through each day, 15-year-old Leanne confronted Hamilton Byron, who then proceeded to attack her.
Wow, I'm proud of these girls.
Yeah, I mean,
But also, that's awful.
Like, there's so many, like, stories like this where it's like, you could make a movie out of this where it's like...
Oh, yeah.
Like, horror. It'd be a horror movie, probably, but I don't know. I think definitely showing these things would be better so that people knew and were more aware of cults and...
That's true. I guess cults happen in a different way now because it's hard to be like secluded and.
Oh, they still happen.
No, they just, absolutely, but it's more like powerful people with money, and I guess they have money too. But like that can keep things under the rug. People are paid off.
Just a thought. We could make movies about stuff.
No way.
Unfortunately, the police were no help. When called to question Leanne, who had attempted to run away from the compound, Hamilton Byron told them that she was nothing but a troublesome teenager. It would be 2 more years before she had the opportunity to escape again.
Oh my God.
Yeah. This time the authorities brought her to her foster family, who tried to get her to talk about her past. However, she clammed up and refused to do so.
Yeah, so much trauma.
Wow, yeah, yeah. And especially if you tried the first time and the police didn't help you.
Yeah, so why would you want to open up?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It just probably she resulted in more torture and shit.
Yeah, she probably would be afraid for the other girls there. If like.
True, yeah. By then, 17-year-old Sarah Moore had also become disillusioned. In 1987, she too confronted Hamilton Byron, who was excommunicated from the family. When the two girls reunited, they decided to reach out to the local police, who were already suspicious and keeping tabs on the cult after receiving numerous questionable reports.
Okay.
On August 14, 1987, the police raided the Uptown compound, and the remaining children were taken into protective custody at a facility owned by Community Services Victoria.
That still sucks, too. You're going, I mean, way better, I'm sure, but you're going into the system, but I mean, still, yeah.
Better than being tortured every day and malnourished and shamed.
Oh, my God.
Who you are.
Absolutely. And, you
know. The subsequent investigation was picked up by the media, who had already done a few reports on the family. Most notably in early 1980s, when a man named Hans Holm, what a name, attempted to retrieve his 10-year-old daughter, Kim, from her mother, who had joined the cult.
Oh, that's, yeah. So that's some of the parents were, well, I guess he wasn't part of the cult. So like he was trying to get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The judge issued an arrest warrant for his estranged wife. And in 1983, she and Kim were found in hiding in Auckland, New Zealand. However, this instance was deemed a domestic dispute, which was why no further investigations were launched against the family.
That's weird to me.
I guess it's fair because like she took off.
Yeah.
It'd be hard to be like.
I guess they didn't find them at the.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird that they weren't able to. Make that connection. But anyway, the raid on Uptop was different though. Given the harrowing conditions there, the state that the children were in, and the disturbing accounts given by Leanne and Sarah, to figure out what exactly was going on, the authorities decided to establish Operation Forest, a police inquiry led by Detective Lex DeMann. Lex the Man.
Are you having an okay time?
I'm having a stroke. Yeah. Lex the Man is
That's
cool.
a cool name. Yeah.
That's a cool detective name.
Yeah, it actually is.
Do you think he changed his name?
I don't know.
This guy would be, in our movie, this guy
would be the hero?
I think, no, we want to do a feminist movie.
Yeah.
The two girls are the heroes. Yeah. He's the guy that helps them, though.
Nice. Yeah. I like it.
Lex the Man. Sorry, I can't
Sounds like a frat boy. Lex the Man.
It's such a good name. Meanwhile, Hamilton Byron and her husband Bill, both of whom disappeared around the time of the raid, were traced to Hawaii, where they'd gone into hiding. Shortly afterwards, though, they were extradited by a coalition that consisted of Interpol, the United States FBI, and Australian investigators. They were charged with conspiracy to defraud and commit perjury by falsely registering the births of three unrelated children as their own triplets.
Oh my God.
In 1993, Anne Hamilton Byron and her husband, Bill, finally appeared in a county court in Melbourne. Nothing came out of it, though, and the couple was only made to pay a measly $5,000 fine for the mental, physical, and emotional abuse that they had put their devotees through.
What?
Yeah.
Did people, like, are there details of the case? Like, did people come forward and, like, issue evidence? Like, did they know about the abuse? Like, what?
I don't know. All I got from this was the justice system.
Or were they just putting them through for, like, fraud?
That's a good question.
Jeez.
Yeah. I'm not sure exactly.
Are they still alive?
What they were put through? I'm getting to that.
Okay.
No other punishments was ever enforced. And on On June 13th, 2019, 98-year-old Anne Hamilton Byron died with dementia in a retirement home in Melbourne and was buried with neither public funeral nor headstone. This peaceful end was undeserved, given how the children that she had taken care of were never able to recover from their trauma, with some even going on to take their own lives.
So, after this, did she just chill and live the rest of her life? Did she keep all the millions? And, did she keep doing the spiritual, masses and gatherings? Probably not.
I don't know exactly. Like, she was getting older at that point,
Who put her in the retirement home? Herself?
Probably. <Okay. laughs> Maybe her triplets did. I don't know. I don't know. No, I think she gave up the grift after they were taken into court. But I'm pretty sure she kept all the money.
Oh my God.
And was able to just live out her life.
That's awful.
Until almost 100 years old.
Yeah.
After tormenting hundreds of people.
Hundreds?
Well, not just the children, right?
Yeah, but the people
involved.
Yeah.
Taking kids from the parents. And
oh yeah.
So
yeah.
It'd be hundreds.
Yeah. That's crazy.
That is the end of this tragic story.
What about what about the doctors that were literally stealing kids?
None of them were ever charged.
Oh my God.
I'm pretty sure they all got off.
I mean, they were under, I guess, her influence, but still.
That's no excuse.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. You do your actions, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Should be charged just the same. But yeah, that is, a very sad ending to that.
Yeah.
Story.
I was hoping for better than
I told you it was heavy. I needed you here.
Oh my gosh.
Lift me up. But it is time for cult critique.
Oh,
you know what this is?
I rate it.
Podcast. Yeah, yeah, we rate the podcast.
Yeah, I'm forced to listen to this. I'm just kidding.
So we talk about these shitty people and we rate their cult.
Right. I'm kind of confused about the rating process because I know it's not you don't rate how bad they are. You rate just in general, right?
It varies on my guests. So some people rate it whether it was a good cult. You know what I mean?
They
did well as a cult. Okay. Some people rated on how terrible they were.
Okay.
Some people rated on if they just liked them or not.
Okay.
So whatever you would like to do, how would you rate the family?
I want to give her a higher rating because she's she got away with it.
Right.
She literally did all this and then she's okay, I'm going to chill with my life. And also it was girl led and then she literally got to just make up her own families and stuff, which is interesting.
Yeah,
which is but that's awful that it didn't get any justice too. So I don't know how to rate it in a sense. I'm going to go and I was not hoping for more, but I thought there'd be more about how she was the Messiah and reincarnation, that sort of stuff.
My apologies.
Yeah.
I went into the torture.
I'm going to give them a 2 out of 5, okay. I think, just because good for them, not good for them, but they got away with it, which is crazy.
Right.
I wonder if they could go back and do a investigation. Like, I know she's dead, but like if anyone else was alive that was involved, or like just even have it on the books, like or get like the I know it wasn't just girls, the girls and boys or whatever, people are involved, like some sort of help or
closure.
Yeah.
Well, as I said, like a lot of them are older now, right?
Yeah.
Like they'd be probably in their 60s, 50s, 60s probably now, if my math's right, which it never is. But yeah, they'd be older now. So, and like I said, some of them took their own lives. Like,
yeah.
It is a very sad story. But yeah, I definitely hope that the Australian government or someone tried to help these people out.
Yeah.
Tried to give them a good home.
That's true. So maybe they did. I don't know. But yeah, I think a two. Wait, did I give a 2 or 2.5? 2.
You gave a 2, yeah.
I think a 2 because like that, but also there wasn't enough. There's cult stuff, but like...
I didn't focus on the cult stuff.
Yeah, sorry. No.
I can only do so many new age groups and give the same apocalyptic...
That's true.
...message that they have. Right,
yeah.
They all start sounding the same after a while.
That's true.
So I thought I'd just focus on what made them different than other new age groups. But that's fair. That's a good rating. I'd probably give it around a 2 as well.
Yeah.
Fucking terrible people.
I wonder if this is like more popular or more well known in Australia.
Yeah. That's a good question. Actually, I have Australian listeners. If you're from Australia and you're listening to this episode, let me know what you know about it. Tweet at me, @let's_cult, or send me emails at startacultpodcast@gmail.com. And I'd be very interested to know how well known it is around the Melbourne area, if anyone's from there. Because it was just outside, which is kind of crazy. It wasn't like in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot of spots like that in Australia. So, all right. Well, that about wraps things up. Sienna, do you have any anything you'd like to plug at the end of today's show?
I'd like to plug. I'm not on any podcast things or...
Anything? The Handmaid's Tale?
No. Books? Yeah. Let's turn this into a book review podcast.
Okay, sure.
I'm down. Let's go for it. Chocolate. Eat more chocolate.
You want to plug my new show?
What's your new show? Oh, it is called Reddit on Wiki.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And it's about things that you read on Reddit or Wikipedia, and you don't do like super in-depth research. You literally just get it from Reddit or Wikipedia. And then you talk about them. Yeah, sometimes the topics are random. Actually, they are very random.
They are very random. Yeah. Because we do a different one.
Yeah.
Like, it's a different host every episode. Yeah. So.
It's funny, though. It's good. Yeah. People should check it out. Absolutely.
Appreciate that.
You're welcome.
I wasn't sure where you were going to go with that.
Josh is making me say this right now. I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Please.
No, it is good.
Review. But if you're loving this podcast, be sure to give us a review and tell your friends about it. If you have the means, be sure to go to our Buy Me a Coffee page and become a member, support the show. If you want to keep up to date with the podcast, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram @let's_cult. You can follow our Facebook page @facebook.com/letsstartacultpod, or you can go to letsstartacultpodcast.com and sign up for our newsletter. With all that out of the way, I think we are done. Thank you, Fred, for listening. Thank you for Sienna for coming on today.
You're welcome.
Let's go make that pizza because I am very hungry.
I feel like you could probably hear my stomach rumbling from the mic.
Probably hear mine. Yeah. As well. All right. We'll see you next time. Thank you. This podcast is brought to you by Audible. Have you been wanting to read more but don't seem to have the time? Well, with Audible, you can read your books without having to find the extra time in your busy schedule. Stuck in traffic on your way home from work? Why not marathon the Harry Potter books? In the gym and want to learn about the First Lady? Well, you can listen to Becoming Michelle Obama while doing leg day. And if you go to audibletrial.com/cultivate, you get a month free of Audible. That includes one credit that you can trade in for any audiobook of your choice, access to thousands of audiobooks free to listen to with your account, and best of all, you have access to all of your favorite podcasts in the app as well. So be sure to go to my link, audibletrial.com/cultivate. That's C-U-L-T-I-V, the number 8, to sign up for a free month of Audible and start reading today. Thank you, Audible, for supporting the show.